Okay, so this is the eighth and final basic Buddhist teachings class of this particular go-round. And this is on the four Brahma Viharas. So many of you are probably already familiar with the four Brahma Viharas. It's a wonderful Buddhist teaching, and I think we'll have a great discussion tonight. So just in case you are not familiar or you need a review, a Brahma Vihara, Brahma is a term for an Indian term for a particular god, not like the god, but a god,
Deity.
a heavenly being. And a Vihara is a home, an abode. So these are the heavenly abodes. Or I like to kind of call them the sublime social attitudes. And they are goodwill. So I'm going to talk a little bit more about what each of these means. Goodwill, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. And these were considered by the Buddha and are considered by us to be prerequisites for spiritual practice. So obviously, hopefully, over the course of spiritual practice, you just become more like this as well. Hopefully it's an outcome of spiritual practice, but it's also a prerequisite. Because if you imagine, if you are filled with the opposites, you are filled with ill will and hard-heartedness and envy and distress or agitation or reactivity or anger, it's going to be harder to practice. It's going to be harder to meditate. It's going to be harder to be mindful. It's going to be harder to clear your mind and see things clearly, harder to give up self-attachment, all of that. On the other hand, if your mind is free of passion and imbued with the Brahma Viharas, this is what the Buddha said. So these are different lines from the Pali Canon. You naturally will do no evil or selfish action, and therefore you won't hurt any living beings or generate any bad karma. So if your heart is full of these things, then you're very unlikely to hurt anybody, maybe by accident, but that's very different. You can rest assured you're living the best possible way, regardless of whether or not there's any kind of afterlife. So live a good life, good, kind, compassionate life, and you've got it, whether there's an afterlife or not. If you experience the negative repercussions of your past actions in the present, your experience of these negative results will not feel so bad as they otherwise might. So even if you're experiencing difficulty, if your heart is turning in this way, you won't suffer as much. And you'll be better able to endure suffering and injustice. So the good thing about Buddhism, and one of the good things in my mind, is it doesn't just give us ideals to strive for and compare ourselves to. It gives us practices. It gives us ways that we can approach these things, ways that we can cultivate these things and apply them in our life. I mean, for instance, when I was a Christian, I wanted to be Christ-like. That sounded wonderful. I wasn't. And other than just really wanting to be and trying hard to be, I didn't feel like I had a lot of practical advice about how to do that. Whereas Buddhism's full of it, just like you do this practice and that practice, and study this, and you can do this, and meditation helps, and all of this. So there's various practices around the Brahma Viharas. Notably, we're mindfulness of when we experience these things more naturally and when we don't. I'm going to be talking about that tonight. What causes their opposites to arise? What helps the divine abidings arise? And specific practices we can do to play with and cultivate these attitudes. And this becomes spiritual practice, like profound spiritual practice, when we aim to extend these attitudes unconditionally and universally. That's where the spiritual practice comes in. So that's one of the things we're going to talk about tonight. There's any one of these four divine abidings: goodwill, compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. We feel very easily and naturally for some people, for some beings, some a little more difficult, some it's incredibly difficult, right? So the spiritual practice of it is about trying to extend these attitudes toward all beings. So just briefly to say a little bit more about each one. Metta is the Pali word for the goodwill. Sometimes it's translated as friendliness or loving kindness. Some people really love the word loving kindness. I tend to like goodwill just because it sounds a little easier. Like if you were, you know, trying to extend metta towards somebody very difficult, I don't know that I can really feel loving kindness for, you know, somebody that I imagine just as being incredibly difficult. Can I goodwill in some kind of sense of just like, well, I want them to be free from fear and anxiety, right? That's goodwill. So wishing for someone's welfare, and we can extend metta toward ourselves as well. All of these things can also be attitudes we have toward ourselves. Karuna, or compassion, arises when we feel goodwill for someone and we see them suffering. So like everything except for equanimity, these two, compassion and sympathetic joy, are really built on goodwill. If you don't already have a sense of goodwill for someone, you're not going to feel compassion or sympathetic joy for them. If you feel goodwill for them, you want their well-being, and then you see them suffering, then you feel compassion. If you see them experiencing good fortune, then you experience sympathetic joy. And this can be in some ways more challenging than compassion. Sometimes when we see someone suffering, it's not threatening to us generally, right? It's like, and we can even feel maybe a little pity, maybe a tad of superiority. We're like, oh, I feel compassion. But when somebody's doing well, you know, then we're more likely to kind of compare or be envious or wonder whether they deserve it or something like that. So other more selfishness tends to come in when we're regarding their good fortune. Or we judge whether they're worthy of, or what makes them happy. This is a pretty old book, Buddhist Thought in India by Edward Kanza, but I love his section on the Brahma Viharas. And he said, in the deeper layers of their minds, people harbor a definite aversion to dwelling on the happiness of others. Envy and jealousy are strong, deep-seated, though rarely admitted counterforces. All the time, we jealously compare our lot with that of others and grudge them the good fortune which eludes us. Then we have upeka, or equanimity. And this is a challenging social attitude for most of us, except when we consider people we don't really have any investment in, right? Like, yeah, I feel complete equanimity is to, you know, who that person's doing, but that doesn't quite count, right? When it has nothing to do with us, that's really more kind of like indifference, which is a near enemy of equanimity. So it might seem kind of like a strange attitude to include in a list of sublime social attitudes or emotions. You know, goodwill and compassion and sympathetic joy seem very warm. Equanimity seems kind of like cool and distant, maybe. But it's really about balancing the other emotions out. So the opposite of upeka is distress. particularly when we encounter suffering. So upekkha could be described as having a measure of objectivity, the ability to maintain a larger perspective, or the ability to manage one's emotions for the benefit of all. So if we get too upset, if we get too overwrought, we won't be any good to anyone, no matter how much goodwill or compassion we have. So I'm going to talk a little later about specific practices that we can do to cultivate and work with, strengthen our social attitudes. But I wanted to do a short, like 10-minute small group exercise and then come back. And so I think before cloud groups and four dirt sender groups, or maybe three, I don't know. And Paul, I don't know if you know how to name the breakout rooms. I think if you look under breakout rooms, you should be able to, you hover over like room three or room one or whatever, and you can rename it. So once you make the four rooms, which looks like you probably need to remake the rooms so that they're even, then you can rename them. And one room can be goodwill. One room can be compassion. One room, sympathetic joy. And one room, upekkha. And while you're working on that, I will explain what the little exercises. And I will, Paul will also broadcast a link to the list of the Brahmaviharas and the questions that you can access once you're in the breakout room. Not everybody has to access it, but and hopefully choosing a secretary to report back. But the gist of it is whatever Brahmavihara you've been assigned, thinking of one who is someone, they don't have to be human, toward whom you naturally easily experience this Brahmavihara in a very pure, unadulterated way. You know, if you goodwill or compassion or sympathetic joy or equanimity. And your group can come up with more than one example if you want to. And as you were thinking, number two, as you're thinking about this being or person, come up with three words or phrases to describe this feeling, what kind of thoughts or emotions or impulses or whatever tend to arise when you contemplate this being and this Brahmavihara. And then three, who is someone toward whom it is extremely difficult to extend this Brahmavihara? And again, you can come up with more than one example. And as you think about this being or person and try to extend this Brahmavihara toward them, what arises in your body and mind? What resistance, you know, what arguments, what, you know, what's your response? And go ahead and be honest. Yeah. So how are you doing? So it looks like we need to recreate four rooms. And there we go. Look at that. An unassigned. So we got to assign.
I'll assign them.
Okay.
Do a couple.
Good. All right. So you, once you join your, it should say what your what your room is. All right, everybody, come on back. And we will start our report back. So we ended up in the Dirt Zendo here, we didn't end up with a meta group, but we ended up with a group for each of the other ones. So let's start with the meta group. Do we have a secretary for the meta group?
That was us, right? Goodwill. It's Goodwill. Goodwill.
Goodwill. Yes. Goodwill.
I'll do it unless the other meta group wants to, somebody in the group wants to do it. Any takers? Okay. I took notes. So, so the first question is, what, you know, name a being that you feel like you can really sort of practice the Brahma Vihara consistently with. And Cassie felt this way about her dog Buddy, who was a blind senior dog who she adored. So some of the words that came up around Buddy, but also for those from the rest of the group, were things like tenderness, a feeling of tenderness. And Ruth Ann mentioned a feeling of tenderness and calm. And then unconditional love, which kind of goes both way between sort of the person and the being, appreciation and gratitude. And then Ruth Ann had a really nice sort of a expression on this. And Ruth Ann, please weigh in if I mess this up. But the practice of Brahma Vihara gave her a white with a pet, I think. She was talking about particularly was a wider sense of community, because the being, the animal, the pet, evokes a feeling of connection and humanity and expansiveness, and facilitates generosity beyond just with that relationship. So I thought that was very touching. Okay, so that was the first, those are the first two questions. And then we talked about who is someone who's hard to extend this Brahma Vihara to. And there were a couple things that came up, and then what arises in the mind and body relative to that. And a couple things came up. One was Ruth Ann's example of practicing metta around the Pentagon and Putin, and some just some feelings that came up around that. And then Grant was talking about, I thought this was really interesting. He mentioned his father and the Alzheimer's, and how the first, he's really able to practice the Brahma Vihara around his father, compassion and, you know, loving kindness and equanimity and all of the four components of that. And then he mentioned that he has, I hope this is okay for me to share this, Grant. He mentioned that it's difficult for him to extend Brahma Vihara to his aunt. And the theme there was that his aunt causes a lot of suffering, like Putin and maybe the Pentagon too, if you want to, if you believe that, if you feel that way. And so maybe it's difficult to practice Brahma Vihara or to experience Brahma Vihara around people who you see that are actively causing suffering in other people. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really good point. Anyway, I think that's all we have. Please, the rest of the group, weigh in if I've left anything important out. Thanks.
Right. If there's no one else who's jumping in, then let's do Dirt Zendo Compassion.
That's me. Dirt Zendo Compassion. On the screen, I am. So, in terms of people that we felt that we could extend compassion to, family members came up first. Just, you know, daughter was mentioned, immediate family members. Another group that was raised is that one of our group members has a long-term illness, and the compassion came very easily to other people in a similar situation. Mm-hmm. Right, people who have had that same experience, and so one can easily imagine how that's an automatic, you know, because you have that in common. And I selfishly just said me, because like I'm not somebody for whom self-compassion has come naturally and easily, and that's still an ongoing thing for me. So it's become easier, but yeah, that's sort of my main project. So I hope that doesn't come across as weird, but. Mm-hmm. That's the way it is. In terms of people for whom we have a difficult time extending compassion, there was a lot of agreement that horrible politicians are very difficult to be compassionate for. I don't need to name any of them individually, because there's just so many. Just pick one, right? They're just awful. And like Betty was saying, another another group of people that we had a hard time extending compassion to were people who were making sort of actively bad decisions, like somebody that seems culpable in their own situation, you know, somebody who's actively choosing to harm themselves in this way or that. And you could just become frustrated and have a difficult time extending compassion because you're doing that to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so that acts as an impediment to my compassion somehow. But yeah, that's kind of the broad strokes.
Yeah, cool. Okay. Yeah, and then how about clouds and no compassion?
Hi, that's us. So we kind of circled around a bit doing a not exactly the right question, and so we kind of circled back to it. You almost got all the way through it. Someone we easily extend this Brahma Vihara to, children came up, people that were close to us, people who we have a sense of attachment to, came up a lot. And then one that was interesting is like some situations with some people, you don't really have much of a choice other than compassion sometimes. And so it just sort of almost extends naturally because of those circumstances. I think like in terms of like words to describe what it feels like, there was like relief and joy and shared love and kind of like a peacefulness. And who is someone to whom you see it difficult to extend this to? We didn't quite get all the way to it, but I think it's interesting because sort of like a common theme is people who we see that like are antagonists or they're unfamiliar to us. We don't understand why they're doing the things that they do. And I think, you know, that kind of lack of attachment, the kind of lack of connections that we saw in the people who it's easy for, if we don't have those things, if we don't understand those people, if we have lots of other choices than extending compassion, then I think it's really easy to select a different emotion like anger or resentment. But yeah, that's kind of what we came up with.
Thank you very much. All right, so then we're on to sympathetic joy. Let's do clouds and O first this time. Sympathetic joy.
That was my group. I do it unless somebody else wants to. So the groups that we find it easy to extend sympathetic joy to were our friends and our kids and elderly parents. Mm-hmm. And the kind of emotions we have around that are feeling proud, particularly of our kids, and a sense of relief and ease. And that was kind of in relationship to, I brought that up in relationship to when my mom, she's 94, and when she has a good day, I just feel relieved and a lot easier. And other emotions were a feeling of excitement and happiness and joy. And somebody that we have trouble, difficulty extending sympathetic joy towards, we didn't actually name any specific people. It was just somebody mentioned perhaps a coworker or somebody who's kind of pushy and lords their success and happiness over you, like kind of trying to be, you know, one up on you. And or maybe people we have been in conflict with or have you know, previous conflict or kind of hold in low regard. And some of the emotions that come up around that were feelings of jealousy or injustice or resentment. And then I inadvertently left the group with like a minute left. So I don't know what you guys talked about after that. So if you have anything to add, go for it.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Then Dirtzendo sympathetic joy.
So, you know, I just started writing things down that people said, and I wasn't really aware that there were questions here. Until, there are questions here. I mean, okay. As was already said, most people were very forthcoming when it comes to who we feel sympathetic joy for with children, our own kids, in my case, my cats. And in my own case, I have on my mind a particular friend. And we talked about how you experience this. And for a couple of us, the feeling was you feel it up here in your upper chest, in your heart area. And it's a feeling of hope. It's a feeling that everything's going to be okay. It's a feeling that I hope everything is going to be okay. It's, I particularly mentioned lightness of being, but it's just this feeling that everything's right. Everything is where it's supposed to be and it's good. And then we talked a little bit about, we actually didn't get too much farther than this. Someone for whom it's extremely difficult to have sympathetic joy. I think everybody has at least one of these, if not a couple. I mean, I think this is just part of life. One person mentioned a particular in-law. Another person mentioned a boyfriend situation. We were all women from years gone by and how it went awry. But then, you know, something untoward happened in what was going on there. And it was great. You know, we were able to rejoice at the fact that they got theirs.
Anti-sympathetic joy. Yeah.
And I remember that the second to the last time Thomas Bruner was here on a Sunday, not the last one, but the second to the last one, the topic was sympathetic joy. Mm-hmm. And he reminded us, everybody knows this is hard to do, but he reminded us that the point is that you intend to do it, that you really have the intention there. It may not be easy. You may even fail, but your intention is to have sympathetic joy for this person when they get that promotion, when they get that new car, when they get married, whatever it is. And I don't know if we covered, is that it?
That's the episode?
Sounds good.
If I have.
All right. How about cloud Zendo equanimity?
Hi, I'm reporting for the Cloud Equanimity Group, and it was really lovely to hear people talk about the specific people they easily and naturally felt equanimity with. And as I'm listening to the other ones, what's coming up for me is one person named a brother. I named my grandchildren. Somebody else named a medical situation, and the fourth person named a specific friend. And what was interesting was that each of us did not say everything about this person or situation is just so perfect and golden that I always feel joy and peace. Everybody named being able to see both, to having both delights and challenges, but feeling this unconditional sense of all will be well, this sense of it's balanced. Those were some of the words that were used, or that the challenges, the disturbance is transient. So that was really very nice part of the conversation. When we got to the part about beings with whom we are very challenged with equanimity. We were ran short of time. I was the only one who got to speak. And I said that I'd had a concussion just before a certain former president was elected and was felt very porous, and that people who were intense, that the feelings that they were projecting, I could not separate myself from. I would feel it. I wouldn't feel, and that when I would see this former president, the words I used were poisoned and flooded. For me, that was like, is really the most extreme experience I've had of having that experience with somebody. And what was interesting, well, I'll just say this, what is interesting to me as I reflect on it was I did not just feel that that he was having this negative impact, but I felt he was having this very negative experience and I was sharing in it. And it felt bad to me, and it felt like it must feel bad to be him at the same time. It was, yeah. So that was our group.
Thank you. All right, one more, Dirtsendo Equanimity.
Okay, our group, the three of us each talked about, I think, what we ended up calling the easy friendship. Mm. So this would be a person that we've known for a long time. As Kathleen's group discussed, we noted that this is an imperfect being, but that we felt that we could be tolerant and accepting were some of the words we used of those quirks or those predictable difficulties we might get into with this type of friend. And we found ourselves able to remain stable and interested in the long term and preserving that relationship. Feelings that we had about this relationship words were tolerance. We talked about appreciation for or sadness about the other person's struggles and being able to relate to those imperfections, recognition that those were part of the whole person. When it came to people, we had a difficult time feeling equanimity toward. A mother was mentioned, and similar to other groups, Hitler or other similar leaders, Putin comes to mind for me. When it comes to feelings, when we consider these people, we didn't have time to discuss our feelings all off, or a couple I can think of, and then maybe my partners would like to chime in, but frustration, pessimism, this feeling overwhelmed and kind of agitated are feelings that come to mind for me when I think about Putin, for example. And is there any possible positive outcome at this point? Anybody want to add anything? Okay, great. Thanks.
All right, cool. So I think many of you are probably familiar with meta practice. But the gist of the practice, there are many different practices, but the main emphasis is, you know, builds on the kinds of things we've been talking about, where you begin, you call to mind someone for whom it is easy to extend this particular attitude. So if you're starting with goodwill, which is, like I said, it's fundamental. In some ways, if you can't feel compassion for somebody, or you can't feel sympathetic joy for someone, you don't feel goodwill for them either, right? Like, you've got to go back down to that just general sense of goodwill. So there's a lot of emphasis on meta. Equanimity I feel like many different aspects of our practice are aimed at increasing our equanimity, our sense of perspective, you know, our sense of letting go of some of our self-attachments and seeing things more clearly so we're not as reactive and all that. But the metta practice, you start with someone easy. So you call to mind that child or that, you know, good friend. For me, it's like, I don't know, pets and children. It almost, you go beyond that and it just starts to get complicated right away. You know, even when I think about, you would hope that I could think of my husband, but there's a part of, you know, it's like, well, that, you know. So what comes to my mind as I try to extend it is like, you know, as long as you're not doing that thing, or, you know, like there's conditions.
Yeah.
There's immediately conditions, or like, yeah. And in like sympathetic joy, there's often the conditions of like, well, they want you to be happy, but not about that. I mean, that is just, you know, shallow, or I can't relate to it, or something like that. But I like to think about sympathetic joy as, you know, when you, I think of a little kid who's just managed to like brush her teeth all by herself for her first time. And she's like, and you're like, yay, you know, yay, you are happy for the child. You are sincerely happy. You are not saying like, everybody could do that. Like, it has nothing to do with you. This is making that person happy, right? So I like to think of like how the Dalai Lama would feel, you know, when somebody says, oh, look, I got this new iPhone. The Dalai Lama would probably be like, wow, I haven't seen one like that before. Just, you know, this really open-hearted, generous thing. So we start off with that metta practice of calling to mind someone for whom this is very easy. And it's like you practice the feeling. You practice the attitude. How does this feel? You feel that warmth. You feel that joy. You feel that, you know, like how yourself isn't involved. It's not about you. It's just goodwill. I just want things to go well for you. And then kind of, you know, keeping that feeling in mind, then you call to mind somebody for whom it's just a little bit more difficult, right? Just somebody for whom it's a little bit more complex. And usually we can start to realize, like, of course we extend that to that person as well. If we set aside all those conditions and concerns and criticisms and whatever, we want them, so the phrases, there's different versions of it, but I really like, may you be free from fear and anxiety. And you really, you know, when you think about that, even people with whom you have a complex relationship, you want them to be free from fear. You want them to be free from anxiety. And then may you be at ease. And then may you be, and interestingly, the last time I heard Chosen Bays say this, and she does a metta retreat every year, she said, may you be truly happy. And I mean, to one extent, that can be introducing that judgment, like, right? Like, as long as you're not happy about those shallow things. But there's a way to do it that's non-judgmental too, right? Like, may you be truly happy. And, you know, maybe temporarily, you know, your brand new flashy car is making you happy. But I hope that, you know, you experience real happiness too, where maybe the car doesn't even matter so much, right? That you've, and then further along, we realize if someone is truly happy, if they are truly at ease and they're free from fear and anxiety, they're nice too. They're not, so whenever people are acting with cruelty, or they're bigoted, or they're whatever, they're or power hungry, or all the various things you can list, they are not happy. Somebody was saying that, right? Like, you know that this these people who cause so much pain and agitation, they are not happy. In which case, we can extend compassion to them. We can hope at a deep level for their true well-being and recognize that their behavior reveals that they are not happy, and we can feel compassion for that as well. So you extend metta to somebody for whom it's a little difficult, and then further and further. So there's actually can be a very formal exercise where you do this and just notice where the limits are and see if you can push them just a little bit. But there are, just so you know, we already reached 9 o'clock. But I just want to point your to, I do have three podcast episodes on the Brahmaviharas, and I go into some detail about this. There's some wonderful instructions in a very old text, the Visuddhimagga, the Path of Purification, where a monk called Buddhaghosa lays out, I can't even remember how many there are, all these different ways you can work on metta if it's hard. And to me, this says like, okay, so even whatever it was, 700 years ago, 1,000 years ago, whatever, it was hard for them too. Clearly, this can be really hard, right? Because that's like the very fact that there's all these different things. So if you're like, okay, I'm trying to feel it, I'm trying to extend this feeling of goodwill for our own sake, as well as for anyone else's, right? Because ill will and agitation and all of that is not helpful to us. So here's just a few of them. Recall that your enemy wishes bad things upon you, and you bring them about for them by dwelling in anger and ill will. Recall some controlled and purified state in that person, which inspires confidence when remembered. So maybe thinking of something sweet they did, or something good that they have done, or whatever. If someone seems to have no redeeming qualities, try to summon compassion for that fact. Reflect on the damage anger does you. Think about the conduct of the Buddha and other noble ones in the past, or maybe people you know. Deconstruct who it is you're angry with. Who exactly are you angry with? Where is that? People change. Are you angry with Putin's hair? You're angry with his nose? Are you angry with the manner of his speech? You know, like, it helps. Or, so there's many of them, but here's another one that I really like. Give the subject of your resentment a gift. I mean, I feel like, well, try something, try anything, who knows? Try to be nice to him, bring him some cookies, you know? And if you just kind of imagine that, of like, you might end up just kind of surprising this person, right? You might have this kind of resentment built up, but you're just like, well, okay, you know, here you go. And they might kind of melt and change, and you might as well. So, all right. Thank you all for coming. We dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Parivartha.